Brace the rudders! Raise the sails! Raise the sails!
Captain, an unidentified ship is approaching. Over.
Roger. Wait, is that an Enterprise sales solution?
Reach sales professionals, not professional sailors. With LinkedIn ads, you can target the right people by industry, job title, and more. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next campaign. Get started today at linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
This is the way it feels to move through summer in Lululemon. Iconic align softness without the front seam. For our smoothest look and feel ever, summer won't know what hit it. Stretch your limits in the non-stop flexibility of the new Lululemon Align No Line Pant in select stores and at lululemon.com.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Tech Entrepreneur on a Mission podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration and the author of The Remarkable Effect. I envision a world where every B2B SaaS startup succeeds because they're creating software that customers would miss if they were gone. And here's why. Research consistently shows that 90% of all startups fail, and that's bad. What's worse, however, is that 75% of SaaS scale-ups fail, companies that are supposed to have product market fit. Far too few scale-ups create the traction they aspire for and fail for the wrong reasons. And I believe this should stop. And hence I created my business. And the goal that I have with this podcast is twofold. First, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. Secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what it requires to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. The guest on my podcast this week is Christian Klepp, founder of Einblick and host of the B2B Marketing on a Mission podcast.
The way that marketers need to deal with addressing buy-in is they need to understand how their organization works. How does your company generate revenue? Where is the most revenue coming from? Which industries, which customers? Do you understand what EBITDA is? Because if you don't understand, you better start learning about it quickly, because that's what your board cares about, right? Okay.
This is Christian. He's a global citizen, entrepreneur, podcast host, and B2B marketing expert with over 13 years of experience across diverse markets. Throughout his career, he worked at major global brands like Philips, Caterpillar, Samsung, and Logitech. He's a true third culture kid. He grew up in Austria, the Philippines, Singapore, and China, and is currently living in Canada, giving him a multicultural perspective and an ability to bridge East and West. In 2019, Christian took a leap of faith and co-founded his own B2B branding and marketing consulting firm called Einblick. He's also the host of the popular B2B Marketing on a Mission podcast, where he interviews talented professionals in the B2B space and provides a platform for sharing cutting-edge insights with the B2B community. Being a regular listener to his podcast inspired me to invite Christian to my podcast. We explore why marketing isn't optimally leveraged inside many B2B SaaS companies. He shares the insights from well over 100 podcasts on what marketers should do differently to increase alignment and buy-in across the organization to make a larger impact. Last but not least, he explains how to avoid complacency in marketing and how, by leveraging different perspectives, the company can stand out more and increase resilience to adapt faster to market change. By listening to this podcast, you will learn four things. Firstly, how to turn marketing into a core driver for the business. Secondly, how to get insights that matter beyond just interviewing customers. Thirdly, how to approach podcasting strategically, get instant value, and what to prioritize first to get going. And lastly, how to go about analyzing competitive strategy to further strengthen differentiation. Well, hi, Christian. Thank you for making the time available today and being the guest on the podcast.
Yeah, Ton, pleasure to be here and thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is a little bit of a special podcast because this is you're not a CEO of a SaaS business.
No.
But the reason why I invited you is because I've become sort of a fan of your podcast, B2B Marketers on a Mission, which is, you know, That's very much related to my podcast, Tech Entrepreneurs on a Mission.
Yes.
And I realized, wait a minute, there are some valuable lessons to share here that my audience, typically people, of course, in the B2B SaaS space, can learn from and can pick up from. Hence, inviting you. Before we start talking about what you learn on your podcast, particularly around the marketing domain, a little bit about yourself. What do you get energy from as a person or as an entrepreneur?
Yeah. Thanks for the question. And Wow. That's a great question. I mean, I'm motivated because I tend to be a very curious person, and I'm always curious about learning new things. I've had the privilege of living in different countries, as we've had that conversation previously, and I live in Canada now, but I'm originally from Austria, and unfortunately we lost to Turkey, but that's just the way it goes. But I mentioned all of that just to simply say that I've always had this curiosity about other countries, other cultures, other languages, and that somehow that curiosity has transferred into the professional field as well. And it's that curiosity that really keeps me going. It's that eagerness, that anticipation of what's next, or what could we possibly do next, right?
Yeah, exactly. That may be a good bridge also to your podcast, because one of the things that you, that like listening to the podcast, I've picked up a couple of times, is that you want B2B marketers to start thinking differently about particular things.
Yes. But
that's maybe not the only thing why you started this. So what is the big idea behind your podcast?
Yeah. The big idea is really look, I started this during the pandemic, and it was really based on my own professional experience and the experience of my clients, right? And what is that experience? That for many, many years, and unfortunately that hasn't gone away, in the B2B world, marketing is kind of still treated as, not very important, right? I'm not saying that it's like that 100% of the time, but more often than not, in the past, and even to a certain degree, even now, when I'm dealing with clients, they still run up against this wall internally within the organization. And the reason is that people within the organization do not see marketing as a strategic function. They don't give marketing that seat at the table, right? The C-suite and whatnot, right? And a lot of that, I think, is really because B2B, traditionally, they're, a lot of the industries are very sales-driven. They're very product-driven. And marketing was always treated as a kind of support mechanism. Fortunately, through different market dynamics, you can also say partly through COVID and because of digitization and because of modernization, this mindset has started to shift. In my personal opinion, the shift isn't happening quickly enough, right? You still run into companies or people where they, marketing is still not given an adequate budget. They're still not given that strategic role. So there is still a lot of work to do, right? But the reason I think why my podcast came into being is that this mindset needs to change. These conversations need to be had within the organization. But in order to enact this change, to initiate these change, B2B marketers themselves have to change. They have to be that driver of the change. And they themselves also have to adapt, right, to changing market dynamics. And that's the reason for being of my podcast.
I tend to agree with you, because I've experienced similar things at the company I used to work for. There definitely was it was a role inside the board, at least after the company delisted and became part of private equity. But before that, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So I've seen the shift. Well, your podcast is always about practical action. Just one thing. If the people that are listening to this podcast are dealing with this challenge, that is not taken seriously enough, that it is not a strategic function, should they change about their mindset to make it practical?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a lot of it really depends on the organization itself and at what stage they're at. Also the industry vertical, because in my experience, I find different industries have a different way of viewing marketing, as strange as that might sound to some people. But a lot of it is really, and I hate to use this word, but it's the truth, it's about education, right? Because a lot of times, at least in my experience, again, the reason why marketing is being roadblocked internally is because of, well, out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah.
And it's this mindset that if we don't know anything about it, then that probably means it's not that important. And that couldn't be further from the truth, right? So marketers, I think it's their responsibility to also focus as much on promoting, educating people internally, right? Because right now, I tend to work with marketers that are focusing mostly on the external factor, external campaigns, external communication, but they're not spending enough time telling people internally, like, look, this is what we're doing, right? Yeah. And this is the reason why it's relevant to you. So, and it's ironic, right? When you deal with marketers that say, well, we don't know how to promote this internally because our board doesn't get marketing. And my question to that is, well, what are you doing to get them to understand, right?
Yeah.
What you guys are working on and how are you making it relevant to them? Because if you're coming with all your marketing jargon and all this data that they don't understand, then of course they're going to roadblock it, right?
Exactly.
So,
exactly. Yeah. That's where storytelling comes in, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Taking it out of the jargon and out of the domain specific things and making it part of the, how does it support where we want to go as a whole company?
Exactly.
I like that. I like that.
Exactly.
But talking about your kind of the topic that you typically have on the podcast, mm-hmm. and the guests you interview, you've, like you said, you started this in COVID. So there's a couple of years going on right now. What is the problem that keeps coming back that everybody seems to struggle with? I think you already highlighted one strategy.
Yeah.
But what's another one?
Yeah, I mean, strategy is certainly one. The other one, I think, is getting buy-in. Like, I keep hearing this again and again and again. And I mean, short of exaggerating, every other guest that I interview, we always get back to this topic of getting buy-in internally, right? Because marketers are always contending with, okay, that's a great idea, that's a great approach, but I don't know how to get that approved. I don't know how to get buy-in from the board, right? So it's always trying to get buy-in, dealing with internal pushback. And I think, I mean, I'm oversimplifying it now just in the interest of time, but I think sometimes also the way that marketers need to deal with addressing buy-in is they need to understand how their organization works. How does your company generate revenue? Where is the most revenue coming from? Which industries, which customers? Do you understand what EBITDA is? Because if you don't understand, you better start learning about it quickly, because that's what your board cares about, right? Like, so things like this, right? So getting buy-in, strategy is certainly another one. And unfortunately, it's this conflict that seems to be existing for a very long time, an age-old conflict, the marketing and sales conflict, the marketing and product development conflict, right? It seems like these groups, they don't have to be warring factions. They can actually be great collaborators. They can actually, I've been in these situations where I was the marketing person dealing with the sales, and we actually worked really well together. But it's finding that gap to fill, those commonalities, those common challenges that both sides need to solve, and showing these other business units what you bring to the table, right? So these are some recurring themes that I keep seeing. And you know, one that I've seen in the past year and a half, at least, that keeps coming up, and I do see this as a problem, but this over-reliance on AI.
Yeah, true.
Right? This whole concept of that AI is going to solve all our problems, and we better just jump on the bandwagon and think about the robust prompt that we can come up with. And I'm not dismissing AI. I use it myself for my work, but if you rely on it 100%, I think that's a dangerous path to go down.
That's true. Completely agree.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the combination of both that is the where the effect happens, not the single ones.
That's right.
I like that. By the way, on strategy, on the battle between sales and marketing and the buy-in, I think there's a common theme there, and it comes back to this thing, education.
Yes.
Funny enough, this morning I interviewed one of my customers, and we were going through how they experienced the repositioning project that we did.
Mm-hmm.
And he also brought in this topic of buy-in. And he said what stood out for him as one of the components of the project is how buy-in was made part of the process from the early beginning. And that's the way I look at it as well. I mean, I come from Unit 4, and the buy-in is so important. When I was heading up product marketing at Unit 4, and was part of the positioning, did the repositioning there, That is so critical because it touches every single part of the business. Not only people sometimes see it is something of marketing. I believe, by the way, the positioning should be owned by the CEO because it is effectively the translation of the strategy of the company, who you focus on.
That's right.
What's your core value proposition is, why you win, and all of those type of things.
Yeah.
But again, to come up with the value proposition and the positioning, you can involve everybody in the company, and we often forget that. So what I typically do in my project is just to make an online environment where they can almost invite everybody in the company that responds to certain questions, and that is then crowdsourcing the company knowledge. And the good thing is that everybody feels involved. They can see things evolving to something. They say, hey, this makes sense, and I contributed to this. And what do you get? Buy-in from the get-go. Way easier to do the rollout after that. And I think very often we forget that. It's like we are in our own bubble. We have our own targets. We have our own things that we are responsible for. We delivered it. And then good luck with it somewhere else. And it happens many, many times. You know, I've seen it on in this throw it over the fence from a product perspective. I've seen it throwing over the fence on the sales perspective. And it continues. And nobody's benefiting from there.
Absolutely.
So that's, I think, the main dilemma to overcome when it comes to getting board-level attention, stopping the battles, and get everybody to say, hey, this is great and we support this.
There's one more thing I'd like to add to that. It's I think it's important, especially when you're dealing with different business units that are like non-marketing, for instance, of which there are many, especially in bigger organizations. It's important to also find those champions within those other business units that are already bought in from the get-go. They already understand what you're trying to do and that it's in their interest as well to collaborate and work together. And these are the people that will also help further your cause, if I can use that expression, right?
It is the same what we do. I mean, if you do it the right way, it's the same what you do with customers. You know, if you want to develop a remarkable product, you don't invent this in the house. Parts of it, of course, you do, but it's always in connection to, okay, are we in sync with what is the problem that keeps our ideal customer up at night? And what are they expecting as the outcome that we have to exceed expectations on? So we go to our customers for those type of things. So why don't we do this internally? Because at the end, for marketing, these are our internal customers that have to make it happen.
Yes, that's right.
It's, out of the, I'm not sure how many podcasts you've done so far. I think it's about 140, if I'm correct.
Yeah, 143. Yeah, close enough.
Close enough, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you remember as an anecdote that blew you away from it?
Wow. Good question. There's so many. What really blows me away is there's really many things, right? I mean, it's one is like how generous a lot of the guests are with A, their time, B, sharing their experience. And when I say experience, I'm talking about their successes and failures, right? Because I think that's one of the reasons why some of the audience members of the audience listening to the show is because a lot of the guests offer, it's not just actionable tips, okay, so this is what you can do after listening to the interview, but they also say, well, listen, you better not go and do this because I tried that when I was starting out and I failed miserably and this was the result. Yeah. So what I did instead was this, right? So it's always great to have examples like that from the guests. So I think that one I thought was really like insightful. And it does take a certain person to admit like, look, I did this and I failed, right? Mm-hmm.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah.
Is there one that stood out?
Yeah. No. So, for instance, there was a guest I had on the show, and it was very much content related. And they decided just to focus on like maybe one particular channel because it was a channel that the company has been using for a long time, and it just didn't seem to work, and it ended up failing, right? So, instead of feeling miserable about it and like, oh my gosh, what did it fail, right? Like what they did was they conducted what I like to call an autopsy. Right. So it's kind of like if you think about CSI or a detective story, okay, you go to the morgue and you find out what happened, right? And why did this fail? And they managed to dissect the campaign. And from there, they realized, okay, so this is the reason why this wasn't performing, right? And then they went out and did some customer research and talked to the customers, okay, about what kind of content do you like to read and why, and what don't you like to read and why, right? And so they decided to shift their focus and try different content channels and different content formats. And they saw it took some time, but they saw some bigger traction, right? And I'm really generalizing it now, but yeah. In a nutshell, like just to summarize what this guest said, that's generally like one good example, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Of some of the successes and failures. Another one that really blows me away is the background of these guests, right? Like how, because like, look, let's be honest. I don't know about you, but when I was in kindergarten in Austria, I didn't say when I grew up, I want to be a B2B marketer, right? Like, so we all had this certain path or this certain journey we took to get to where we are right now. And it's amazing how many of the guests that I interview, well, you know, when I ask them about their background and what have you, many of them did not start out in B2B marketing, right? So I'll give you some examples. There was one guy I interviewed 2 years ago who was actually training to become a singer. Yeah, so he was on America's Got Talent. I think he actually won the contest. And now he's working as the head of social media for a large software firm in Silicon Valley. Right? And yes, short of stating the obvious, yes, he can sing. Because I did ask him to sing in the interview. Right?
Yeah.
Another guest was a chemist working in a laboratory up until the pandemic. And then, you know, when the pandemic came, you know, there was lockdown and everybody went home. And obviously, I don't know about you, but like last I checked, you can't work in a laboratory virtually, right? So
no.
He made the shift to the world of marketing, right? And credit to him, he really went through all the motions, right? Did all the accreditations, did all the online courses and got all the certifications, right? And, you know, quite frankly, if you're doing one job for a certain period of time and you just suddenly decide to make this shift, wow, right? That's sure. Amazing, right? Another guest I had on, just a last example, was somebody who she had a PhD in aerospace engineering. I mean, like, don't we all, right? Like, and now she started her own marketing firm, and big surprise, she's targeting engineers.
Yeah, exactly. But I had her on my podcast as well. She actually started a SaaS company after that. So.
Yes.
I know who you're talking about. The amazing story.
Yes, we'll keep everyone in suspense. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it proves again how versatile we are, and that your imagination at the end is what stops you from achieving what you want.
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of people think, you know, I've never studied this. I haven't got the experience. I cannot do this, but with the right willpower, you can.
Yeah.
Like this, I like those examples. But going back to the practical advices and so on, one of the things that you often zoom in on is the frameworks that people use.
Yes.
Is there one that particularly stood out during the work? I mean, of course, we can zoom into to one particular area. For example, it could be content management. It could be
No, it's a great question, and I was really thinking long and deep and hard about that one because, quite frankly, I think I've been doing this for 4 years. And as I said, I've interviewed about 143 people now, and many of them had great frameworks. One that really stood out, and there are many, and if I don't mention the one that you guys mentioned in your interview, I apologize in advance. But one that I think many guests go back to is, okay, for example, how do you develop the right marketing strategy that is not only actionable, but it delivers results. So everybody had a different framework, but it generally went something like this. First and foremost, conduct an audit of, you know, what you have right now, your existing assets. Most of the guests that I interviewed were with companies that already had existing initiatives, right? Existing activities that were ongoing. So conduct an audit on your current assets and your current activities. What's working? What's not working and why, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, if it's not working, chances are you should stop doing it. And if it's working, understand why it's working and how you can improve it further, how you can amplify it further. Another thing, which I think is extremely important to do, and unfortunately, I don't understand why not many people do this, but conduct interviews with your customers. Talk to your customers, right? And here's the challenging part, right? It's one thing to talk to existing customers that are happy with your product or happy with your service and happy with your solution. But also, it would be just as interesting to talk to customers that are no longer working with you.
Yeah.
Talking to prospects that decided not to work with you and work with somebody else. And I know that that's challenging because I've done it, right? It's not always easy to get a hold of these people and say, hey, listen, why were we not a good fit for you? What happened at the end that made you decide, like, you know what, we're going to take our business somewhere else? Mm-hmm. Those conversations are just as important or even more important than the conversations you're going to have with existing customers that are happy with you, right? Mm-hmm. And what you're trying to extract here is obviously, okay, so why are they happy working with you and why? What challenges were they facing? What were those demand triggers? What motivated them to go out and seek a company like you for the mm-hmm. services that you provide? Walk us through the journey that you took, right? Did you get, and you know, many times, at least in the interviews that I conduct, many times it starts with, okay, they identify that they have this issue or this challenge. And the first thing they do is to talk to somebody that they trust and say, yep. Hey, Tom, have you faced this problem before? And who did you go to, right? So it's going through that trust network, right? Because yep. believe it or not, like even in, you know, companies that are dealing with SaaS or technology, a lot of the times the prospects will usually turn first to people that they trust within their network, right?
Exactly.
And then walk us through what else you had to do, right? Did you Google the company? Did you go to the website? Okay, what is it that you were expecting to see on the website? What is your selection criteria? What does that look like? Do you read content to make a more informed decision? Do you download a white paper? Because especially if you're talking about like making a big ticket purchase, like $200,000, this is probably not something where you're going to go, okay, well, that looks great. Let me just take out my credit card and swipe, right? Probably is not going to happen like that. So they will each provide valuable insights into what the company is doing right and what they can improve. After that, obviously, conducting a competitor analysis, or I call it like an analysis of the competitive ecosystem. And that's not to say you need to copy everything that the competitor does, but be inspired and draw reference from that, especially what they're doing wrong, right? What they're doing right and best practices, okay, let's find out what they're doing. But what they're doing wrong, obviously avoid that, right? And based on all of these, right? Because that's a ton of work, right? Like conducting all of that research, right? Talking to the customers, doing the audit, doing the competitive analysis, et cetera, et cetera. And based on that, extract all those insights because the data is only going to be valuable if you use it, right? So extract all those useful insights and use that to lay the foundations for the right marketing strategy, right? Yeah. Which has your key objectives, what you want to achieve with the initiatives, and also setting up some kind of like a performance metrics that you can use to measure your progress or success against, right?
Exactly.
So in a nutshell.
Wow, man, that's, it is, the practicality of it is the power here. One thing, by the way, on the customer interviews, what I mm-hmm. see as a big mistake, just to add to this, that a lot of people go and they interview their existing customers, their happy customers. They also maybe also interview their not so happy customers, and the customers have left. But what they're looking for is what they could do better in order for them to keep them.
Mm.
What is very often far more powerful is to understand why it wasn't a good fit and what you can learn from that about where you fit best.
Yeah.
I recently had one person on my podcast, the CEO of a company, Dream Influencer, Matt Wetterkop.
Okay.
And he came in the company, he was asked to be the CEO and sort of do a turnaround. And they had 20% churn, so that was big. He turned it around pretty quickly, not by going to the customers that went away, but going to the customers that stayed and try to understand why they stayed. And that's where he found the value and the gold. Okay, so this is what our ideal customers are all about. And, you know, chapter number one in my book, The Remarkable Effect, remarkable software companies acknowledge they cannot please everyone. So it's fine that certain companies don't fit. It might be that you can help them with the functionality that you have and so on, but it doesn't make them a customer that is maybe even going to be happy. So that is something, a lot of time we look at it, okay, so where did we fail? And we have to improve that. But very often it's okay, so where do we fail? And that's, and be okay with it, because it's a weakness, and let's focus on our strength. So it's...
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and if I can just add on to that, because it made me think of another quote that was mentioned by at least three guests on the show. And this is also very, very much SaaS related, right? That when it comes to marketing, and regardless of which industry, if B2B, you find yourself in, right, or even in SaaS, if you wait until you have the perfect plan, you've waited too long.
Yeah, true.
Right? Smart. And it's another thing that I always, the advice that I give to other B2B marketers, it's like they have to get over themselves a little bit in terms of this perfectionism, because it's never going to be a perfect plan. You have to, and you know this better than I do in terms of SaaS, do not wait until the product is perfect to launch. Launch it, get feedback, iterate, and carry on.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's always iteration is where the value really comes from. And that is also going back to your analysis, like what works and what doesn't work. So it's iterating certain things. It doesn't mean that the whole thing has failed. One particular element of it has failed. Maybe that's one word was wrong. So
yeah,
it's often can be at that level. Let me see. Couple more questions.
Mm-hmm.
In your podcast, you got this famous thing sort of three quarters in the way, whereby you ask your people, what is the status quo in your area that you passionately disagree with?
Yes.
I would like to kind of return the question to you. What is an area in B2B marketing that you passionately disagree with?
Yeah. Wow. Great question. Great question. I mean, I'll narrow it down to my area of expertise, which is in branding, because I'm a branding guy, so B2B branding. And more often than not, in the world of B2B, a lot of people consider branding a complete waste of time. I've heard people say, well, we don't need a brand. We already have a logo on a website. We're good, right? Which I think for me is completely missing the point, right? So, or the fact that B2B branding in B2B does not have to be emotional, right? So ooh, these are two things that I completely disagree with, right? And I'm not saying like for the emotional aspect, okay, it's not going to be like consumer facing kind of brands where it's like you have everybody crying or whatever, right? It's not that kind of emotion. In the B2B context, I mean, at the end of the day, and as cliche and as cheesy as this is going to sound, you're still dealing with people, right? You're dealing with people are the ones that are making the decision whether they're going to work with you or not, right? And you can argue that, yes, a lot of it is driven by facts, features, logic, and information. But I would argue that a big part of it is emotion, too. And the emotional aspect of it is appeal to what is it that is keeping them up at night? What are these challenges that they are dealing with? What is frustrating them to the point where, okay, they're going out to look for a solution?
Right? Exactly. That can be on the on the pain side, like a frustration on something is just this. It is frustrating, but it can also be on the inspiration side and being frustrated.
Absolutely.
That you're just hitting, like you said in the beginning, the wall.
Right. So that's what I would argue. I mean, not 100% of the time, but in most cases that I've dealt with, that's where the emotional aspect of B2B branding comes in. Right.
Exactly.
The other part where people are talking about branding being a complete waste of time in B2B, and I think particularly in SaaS, and correct me if I'm wrong, many SaaS founders that I've spoken to are very quick to dismiss branding because they want to focus everything and all the resources and funding into either product development or sales. And I'm like, okay, I can totally understand that. It's totally understandable that you're choosing that route. But you're building this thing and launching it, and it's this whole build and they will come mindset. And then you launch it, and guess what? Nobody comes, right?
That's true.
Why? Because in your mind, you feel that this is the greatest invention known to man, and everybody internally is, I call it the internal high five. We've built such a great product, but then you launch it on the market or in the app store, and then you realize, like, oh my gosh, there's like 1,000 other apps that look exactly like this, right? Because to the outside world, they don't know what your product does. They don't know what's the difference. And tell me if you've never seen this before. You go onto a website of a SaaS company, and you look at their homepage, and you're scrolling. I'm like, okay, back up to the top, scroll down and read again. Okay, back to the top, read again. And you, after scrolling 3 or 4 times, you still can't figure out what it is they do.
Every single day, I see that.
So, and that, I would argue, is where branding comes in. That's where positioning comes in. That's where value proposition comes in. That's where crafting the right messaging comes in. Because you can't tell me that this is the revolutionary AI tool that will make your work more efficient. I mean, there's 500 other companies that say exactly the same thing. Okay. What makes this different? Why should they choose you over your competitor, right? And these are the questions that I think a lot of people in the SaaS world need to be able to answer. And this is where I would argue the importance of branding comes into play.
Exactly.
So sorry, I'm going to get that from my soapbox, but this is what I passionately disagree with.
The soapbox, and that's a good one. Yeah. No, you're completely right. Mm-hmm. And if it's very often the companies that have the least clear how they are different that are actually using all this big language, because it needs to be impressed in some way. So revolutionizing is one. All in one platforms.
Game changer is another one. Huh?
Exactly. I think we can just make a whole library of vocabulary of the words that are being used and have a dig about it. For the last couple of minutes, that I've got two more questions that I want to go into. We're both hosting a podcast. And I believe that podcasting is underrated in the SaaS world.
Yeah.
So asking about you, having started the podcast, but also having a lot of guests, what would be a recommendation to you to B2B SaaS marketers or their just entire C-suite to go about it? Yeah, start one yourself, be a guest, and maybe some advice around that.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great question. It's funny you mentioned that because I think 2 months ago, a SaaS entrepreneur called me up at 8:30 in the morning saying, hey, you know, I heard from a friend of mine that, you know, it's important to get on podcasts and we should probably start our own podcast. And, I know I'm kind of cornering you here, Chris, but what do you think I should do? and my answer is always, well, it really depends. And he goes, well, what do you mean? I'm like, okay, well, like everything else in life, getting into podcasting and launching a podcast should be a long-term commitment. It's not like this short-term project that you're going to try to test out, and then after 3 months, you realize it doesn't work, right?
Yep.
So I think it really boils down to, okay, what are your long-term goals, and what do you want to use this for? What do you want to use this platform for, right? Is it to add value to the audience and to build a community around it? Or is it just for you to get yourself out there to promote your company? Because I would say the latter is a little bit like, if that's the only reason why you want to do it, then maybe just leave it, right? But to answer your question, I would say if you're starting out, I would try guesting on podcasts first, right? It's still a commitment, but it's not as significant a commitment as running your own podcast, right? Because that's a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of bandwidth. Guesting on other people's podcasts, well, first of all, they already have their own show and you show up as the guest and you are interviewed on your area of expertise and you provide advice around those specific topics that you're specialized in. I would suggest doing that for maybe the first 6 to 12 months to get a feel for it. And if you feel like, hey, you know, I've been on all these shows and I've been a guest and I feel I can do that really well. And if you are prepared to launch your own podcast, I would say, fantastic. What's your podcast going to be about, right? And who are the guests that are going to come on your show and why should they be your guest?
Exactly.
And then the most important question, I saved the best for last, who is your audience and why should they care, right? In other words, if they are listening to these, let's say like these 30 to 45 minutes of conversation, what are 2 or 3 things you hope they walk away with, right, that are actionable? Because if it's just you and a friend having a conversation about what you did over the weekend, then yeah, then maybe podcasting is probably not the right thing to do, right?
Okay. Yeah. It's like a product, you know?
Yeah.
It has its own life cycle. And at some point, it can go viral and it can be super valuable and people are going to come back and you get to create fans about the product. But it's, like I say, it's and that's a wise thing to say. It is a long-term commitment. So I like the stages that you put in there. Last question then. Mm-hmm. Based on the tidbits of wisdom that you've gained over time, in this case, specifically in the B2B marketing space, what would be a don't and what would be a do that you'd like to share with people that aspire to grow in this space?
So specifically with B2B marketing, right? Or
that's your domain. Anything.
Okay. I've got about 100,000 things, but if I distill it down to like one do and one don't, I would say do always keep your finger on the pulse of the market. Review your marketing plan, your content plans, any kind of strategic plan that you've developed, and I hope that you do. Review them on a regular basis because they are not set in stone. This is not some exercise you do once a year and then one and done, set and forget, or whatever analogy you want to use, right? Yeah. And then at the end of the year, you take it off the shelf and dust it off and check it. No. Check it regularly and make iterations as you go along, because you know maybe something that you planned at the beginning of the year, as you get into Q2 or Q3, you realize like, hey, maybe this isn't really quite working and we need to find out why and what we can do to iterate, or this is working really well and how can we amplify that, right? So that's one thing I would say you should do. One thing I think you should not do is there's an expression in German, and you might have the same in Dutch. It's die Konkurrenz schläft nicht, right? Which basically means the competition does not sleep, right? Which is in so many words means do not be complacent. Do not just sit there and let AI take care of everything, right? So
very well said. Actually, I write about it in my book as well. This disease of complacency is such a hidden, sneaky thing.
Yeah, especially in SaaS, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're the best. And we tell yourself stories and you start to believe them. And in the meantime, your competition is just sneaking by. Thank you very much for this. Thank you for sharing the wisdom, the anecdotes, the frameworks. Where can people go to listen to your podcast or to connect to you and to say hi?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, thanks again for having me on the show. I had a lot of fun. I think LinkedIn is probably the best way to connect with me. I think, Tom, that's how you and I connected.
Yep.
So my handle is Christian Klepp / I'm Blick Consulting. So I'm Blick is EINBLICK and then consulting. Or you can listen to my podcast. So B2B Marketers on the Mission. You can check it out on our website. So that's imblick.co or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
But thank you very much. And good luck on the next 140.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
And this ends my conversation with Christian. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if so, please leave a review on iTunes. And if it inspired you, please share it with other tech entrepreneurs on the mission that you have in your network. Other than that, thank you for tuning into this podcast. I had the honor to speak to Christian Klepp, founder of Einblick and host of the B2B Marketing on a Mission podcast. As said, the goal that I have in this podcast is twofold. Firstly, to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. And secondly, share experiences from tech entrepreneurs like you about what is required to create a remarkable software business and how to overcome the roadblocks to do so. Before I close, I have two more comments to make. If you know other tech entrepreneurs on a mission that have a story worth sharing, please send me an email at ton.dobby@valueinspiration.com. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas. And that starts with you. And if you want to know more about my book, or you're interested in joining the Remarkable Effect tribe, please visit my website at www.valueinspiration.com. Thanks for tuning in. And you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast on iTunes or provide me with your feedback directly. I'll see you shortly on a new episode.